Welcome. Hola. Bienvenidos. Bonjour et bienvenue to the Social Network Show. Welcome to the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. We give you actionable information to make your social networking the best it can be for business to business, business to consumer, and for folks who just like to post. And now, broadcasting from the studios of the Hank Greenspoon School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, the host of the Social Network Show, Jim Nico, and Dr. Jane Kawaski.
You are listening to the Social Network Show. Welcome. You are always our most important guest. This is your host, Jane Karwoski. I'm an experimental psychologist who likes to ponder how all this electronic networking and connectedness might be affecting us as human beings. Rather than plan yet one more research project, I prefer to consider with you how what we do know should affect our lives and actions, whether parent, educator, business owner, student, or even researcher. Jim Nico, founder and CEO of Social Network Intermedia, LLC, joins me here as usual in the studios of KUNV at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Jim, how's it going?
Good. Welcome to the Social Network Show, and we hope you continue with us as we provide episode after episode. A sad note here. Just 1 month ago, virtual violent crime claimed the life of yet another victim. Charlotte Dawson, a judge on Australia's Top Model, took her own life after years of cyber abuse, alleged here on Twitter. It's very appropriate that at this time we welcome back to the show the founder and director of the Anna Kavanaugh Charitable Foundation, whose division, the Bully Battleground, addresses cyber abuse. Welcome back, Anna. Welcome to the Social Network Show.
Thanks so much. It's really good to be back.
This show is part one of a two-part interview. The second half hour will be uploaded just a couple days after part one. So, Anna, let's begin first by recognizing that you have a unique perspective on what it means to be the target of a long-term vicious cyber abuse campaign, a relentless cyber assault, having experienced it firsthand. In your advocacy work for victims of cyber abuse, you refer to it as virtual violent crime. We talked about that a little when you appeared on the show previously, but let's get into it deeper today. The word violent, that's a pretty strong word and can be confusing to people when we're talking about something virtual, something online. There are unfortunately many people who have experienced and even died from physical violence in the face-to-face world. So how do you define violence when comparing the virtual to the physical world?
Well, first of all, let me just say I don't in any way diminish the horrific trauma of a physical assault. That is a violation on a deeply primal level that goes beyond the emotional, psychological, and mental trauma itself. You know, a physical assault comes along with the jarring physical pain and deeply rooted primal fears associated with that. Mm-hmm. In saying that, when we compare virtual abuse or assault to that in the physical world, there is an undeniable connection. With cyber abuse, particularly if it escalates to victim suicide, the end result is ultimately the same and is precipitated by deliberately barbaric and brutal action of the abuser. And in some respects, we have to remember that a physical world assailant doesn't always necessarily intend to kill, but the assault may get out of hand, or an accident may happen, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Whereas online, we need to understand that there is always the intent to effectively murder all aspects of a person, because in the mind of a cyber abuser, a victim's suicide is merely an afterthought. The abuser has murdered their victim over and over and over again in so many ways before the eventuality of the death even occurs. And then just one last point, we also know that the emotional, mental, and psychological imprint left inside a victim of physical assault is much the same as the wounds inflicted through cyber abuse. and post-traumatic stress disorder in either case is a common diagnosis, and essentially the same to the point it's difficult for counselors to distinguish the difference between where the trauma originated, whether it be online or off. So the way we define violence in comparing the virtual and physical realms is really pretty simple, because it is violent. It is violent in intent, violent in delivery, and violent in consequence.
Hmm. Okay, well, one of the things you focus on heavily is the pathology of a cyber abuser. When you say that their aim is to kill their targets, are you really saying that every cyber abuser is setting out to commit deliberate murder by driving someone to suicide? And is suicide murder?
Well, generally, cyber abusers don't start out with a mental picture of, you know, murder and death in mind. It's more innate and insidious than that. Cyber abusers lose the ability to distinguish between legal and illegal, right and wrong, moral and immoral, and so on. But they also lose the ability to comprehend consequences. So to them, victim suicide doesn't register in their mind in the same way that it does for us. They don't grasp the finality and the reality involved in suicide, someone's death, a family's agony and grief over that death, someone's God-given life, you know, cut short. There is that big of a disconnect. All they want to do is destroy. Murder is not a dictionary definition to them. It is an action of deliberate demolition. And that can be anything from murdering a victim's reputation, livelihood, relationships, sense of safety, trust, joy, and just life as a whole. Their pathological drive is to end their victim's life in every way they can, beginning with inflicting as much public humiliation on their victim as possible and escalating from there. Is suicide murder? In this sense, I believe it certainly is. And this is really the most important thing to understand. A physical murder is typically a singular act resulting in a singular death, whereas the process of demolition seen in cyber abuse is a series of deaths inflicted on a victim's life. And the bottom line is cyber abusers intend to kill. They don't care, think about, comprehend, or define the specifics of the ultimate destruction they're after. It's just destroy, destroy, destroy.
That is exactly the word that was coming to mind also while you were speaking, was destructive and the will to destroy. Well, do you think that an online abuser who drives someone into taking their own life, certainly a large contributor toward that, should be held to the same punishment and level of legal accountability as someone who commits murder in the physical world?
No, I don't. And sometimes that surprises people when I say that. But this is why. Someone who commits murder, particularly premeditated, in the physical realm has to possess a degree of disturbance, deviancy, violence, and lack of restraint that, you know, is certifiably dangerous to society as a whole, because they aren't kept in check by our laws or any kind of socially accepted standard. The cyber abuser has free rein on the internet, where they can certainly cause catastrophic damage. But we have to remember, they are cowards at the core, which is why they embrace the cloak of anonymity.
Mm-hmm.
So while they may commit heinous acts online, they typically are kept in check in their physical lives by the same standards that we all live by. As barbaric as they are online, we have to remember that at the root of most cyber abusers is the fear and the threat of shame and humiliation that would come with being exposed for their actions. That's a mortifying thought to them, which is why they go to such lengths to conceal themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But that is how these individuals may be law-abiding citizens in their physical realms, but can still commit violent crimes in the virtual world. So no, I don't feel that even if the abuse they inflict ends tragically in a victim suicide, that they should go to prison for life or receive the death penalty or something. But they do need to be held accountable for driving someone to suicide, for the irreparable damage they cause not only their victim, but the friends and family of their victim. And our laws need to address that. And public exposure, prison sentences, and financial restitution need to become standard and commonly understood consequences to those who participate in cyber abuse, certainly if it results in a death.
Because the action they committed that contributed to this was certainly deliberate, wasn't it? I mean, there's no question about the intent.
Most certainly. I mean, just as I was saying in the last question.
Right.
They aim to kill.
This is Jane Karwoski, and you are listening to The Social Network Show. In the next segment, we will be getting back to the specific damages that victims of cyber abuse do sustain in their daily life.
Questions? Comments? Email us at questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. We'll be right back.
This moment of uncontrollable laughter was made possible by a 32-year-old man with little to no coordination attempting to execute a simple cartwheel. His name is Sergeant Warner, but young James, our laughing friend here, simply calls him Dad. The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Yes, I'd like to just take a moment to mention the Alliance for Women in Media. It's at allwomeninmedia.org. Dr. Jay and I are going to be at the Women's Room at NAB on April 7th. And if you want to learn more about this, please go to allwomeninmedia.org, and you can see what media is doing and what women are doing for media right there. Thank you.
Now, back to the Social Network Show.
Welcome back to the Social Network Show. We are engaged in a fascinating conversation with Anna Kavanaugh. She is telling us about what she has learned about the mentality of cyber abusers, some of the things contributing to their relentless effort to destroy their victims. So let's get back to the specific damages that victims of cyber abuse sustain, Anna. You talk about not only the individual catastrophe to a victim, but also the collateral damage that compounds that trauma, which is when victims are desperate for relief and it can further push them toward completing suicide. What is the collateral damage, and how far does that reach into a victim's life?
Oh, it reaches into every area of a victim's life, and people don't think about that. Cyber abusers are not only inflicting damage and trauma on their victim. The victim's family, including their children, friends, and colleagues, are all affected. So they are the collateral damage that cyber abusers don't even think about. And for a few examples of that damage, a victim's child may suffer night terrors or panic attacks over what is happening to their parent. See, when you damage their mom or dad's reputation and, propagate lies and all sorts of horrible things about them all across the internet, you're also tarnishing the name and reputation by association of the child. And it changes who they are and how they learn to view the world. So they become disoriented and cannot understand, how their family is being redefined in the virtual world by the posting of things that are blatantly untrue about them. Adults can't compute that, let alone kids. And they worry for themselves and what their friends will think, which to the tender psyche of a young person, can cause enormous developmental damage. They worry about what potential employers or college recruiters may find when Googling them upon application. The parents of a victim may suffer debilitating health consequences from the stress and sense of helplessness they feel as they watch their child suffer. Colleagues who work with a victim may lose a significant investment or business by that association. So the damage is severe, not only to the victim, but to everyone who is close to that victim. And, of course, suicide to those collateral individuals, you know, is always the most tremendous loss of all.
That is it's so true when you mention the parents of an adult targeted by this, because they're obviously going to be up in years, and that can be so devastating to them. You have shared with us that your charitable foundation and its cyber abuse division, the Bully Battleground, surprisingly receives more cries for help from adult victims of online abuse than from children and teenagers. So it's really important that we are focusing on adults here in working with adult victims. Do you find a difference between the damages sustained by men and by women, and in how they deal psychologically with the trauma of those damages?
In terms of the specific damages sustained, we don't see all that much difference. The psychological wounds are cut by the same knife, and the ramifications are fairly consistent. But in terms of how men and women cope with and endure the trauma of cyber abuse, it is very different. And men, honestly, have the toughest time of all, the poor guys. They are often left to suffer in silence and pretend that nothing is wrong. And the humiliation that comes with a cyber abuse campaign tends to cut them deeper, because you get into issues of male ego and pride and strength. And also, there seems to be a sympathetic resistance to them, as others often find it sort of more difficult to view a man as a victim in comparison to a woman. And as the role of protector, men tend to feel a deeper degree of personal responsibility for the collateral suffering we were just talking about, that their families endure as, you know, as a result of a cyber abuse campaign. They don't feel as safe in expressing the pain they feel, which in and of itself is much the same as women, but it becomes internalized and creates this emotional erosion that often leads too many times to suicide when there is no means of pain expression or relief. It's a much more isolating event for men. And this is saying a lot, because it's certainly not easy just because you're a woman and you know, you may have more avenues to express your pain. But that's really the fundamental difference we see between genres, or genders rather. But either way, the damage is emotionally catastrophic.
I can sure relate. I know that, the whole scenario of men in any kind of abuse, and cyber abuse included, having worked in the clinical realm for approximately 20 years, it is much more difficult for men to ask for help because, like you say, I think you hit it right on target. First of all, it seems in this society that it's almost an affront to their masculinity, strength, manhood, if you will, which it's not, but it feels that way. And it's like to admit weakness in that realm, especially when it's an abuser that's invisible, is hard. And so we certainly encourage men to come forward. We don't see it as weakness. We just see it as a call for help, in very much like if you got hurt your leg or got in an accident, like a woman or any other person.
And I would just add to that, you know, the men, their natural instinct much more than women is to fight. And when we're dealing with anonymous cyber abuse, you don't know what dragon to slay. I mean, you don't even know what you're battling or who you're battling. And so that just goes into what you're saying there.
This highlights the perception that many of us have in viewing cyber abuse and so-called cyberbullying as a child's issue. So what are the differences you see between adult victims and children? How does that damage differ, or does it?
Well, it's really two different worlds. And it's really important that we remember when we're talking about cyber abuse, this is not one size fits all. When we're dealing with children, we're getting into developmental damage that shapes who they will become and how they will interact with their world. They're not as equipped to cope or to understand the abuse will pass, it won't last forever, and they see what's happening to them from a very limited perspective that's very difficult to pull them out of. They can't understand that in 20 years this will be a horrible memory. They'll be married with kids and jobs and hopefully full lives. They can't see past where they are. With adults, we're talking about something very different. Adults have worked, sacrificed, and paid their dues, so to speak, in building a life. They have built careers, financial assets, families, and so on. They've already defined who they are and are well into that process of fulfilling who they ultimately want to be. And here's the distinction. Cyber abusers take away from children the belief in their future and the self-esteem they'll need to embark on that journey of defining who they will become. What cyber abusers take away from adults is everything they have already earned, everything they have already defined, and they are left with a sense that they can never rebuild or recover from the damage done. They don't have enough time. But there is one common thread that really ties children and adults together, and that's the loss of hope and the demolishment of their sense of future. And then, tragically, the natural ramifications that often follow, such as suicide or suicidal thoughts. That's what they share.
That is so well put. I really appreciate the concise and very, you've obviously done a lot of research and study on this and given it a lot of thought, and you express it so well and has given us so
and
much.
And I've lived it. I've lived it too, as well, and my family has lived it for years. So, you know.
Well, you have that ability to take that experience and put it into phrases that people understand and organize it. You know, I mean, that is really a tribute to your strength. So, we're going to talk with you again on our next show. And we appreciate very much your being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for listening to the show today. Tune in with us, I hope, for the next part of our interview with Anna Cavanaugh.
Thank you, Anna.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media, coming to you from the studios of the Hank Greenspan School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Listen to archived shows and follow us on Twitter. The views expressed on the Social Network Show are those of the hosts and guests and may not be the views of Social Network Intermedia. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia, copyright 2012.